Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. The United Nations Development Program works in 170 countries, focusing on democratic governance and peace building, sustainable development, and climate and disaster resilience. A recent New York Times investigation reveals that the agency has worked with the Colombian government and more recently with GeoPark, a multinational petroleum company, to expand oil drilling in the Amazon. According to the report, the relationship has endangered the livelihoods of the indigenous Siona people of the Buena Vista Reservation. It has polluted their land and destroyed critical ecosystems of the Amazon. The investigation found that the agency tamped down local opposition to drilling, conducted business analysis for the industry, and worked to make it easier for companies to operate in sensitive areas. Colombia is the world's deadliest place to defend the planet. Environmental activists are killed in Colombia at a rate of more than one every week, according to Global Witness. So why is the UN calling for a dramatic reduction in fossil fuel consumption as its development arm at times serves to facilitate the oil and gas industry's operations? Joining us is Sarah Hertes, an award-winning investigative journalist for the New York Times International Desk. Her reporting focuses on gender and the environment. Sarah Hertes is based in Brussels, and you can find her piece at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Well, great to have you. Thanks to you and your colleagues for this important investigation. First off, what sparked this story?
So essentially, before that, my colleague, my editor, Matt Apuso, and I did a story on another UN agency that regulates shipping, and we found incidences of, essentially of them saying things and doing other things. So what we found is that oftentimes they had country representatives arguing for the sake of their own country to regulate emissions that came from ship. But in fact, these country representatives were no other than industry players such as Shell or Total. And so after that, we received quite a lot of tips from people within UN agencies explaining different sorts of issues that was going on. And I was surprised to see how many different tips from different countries we received within the United Nations Development Program. And so that sparked a kind of curiosity to dig deeper into this one specific agency. And there came this kind of reporting that focused on oil partnerships.
Can you tell us a little bit more about this agency? As you report, it has about an $8 billion budget.
Yes, that's correct. Closer to $9 billion, to my understanding. But essentially, it's an agency that is very much in charge of eradicating poverty and making sure that governments are progressing and helping people in sustainable ways. And so it's not a humanitarian agency, but it's very much trying to help develop nations in sustainable ways. And so it has offices in many different countries, as you pointed out. And it works, not only with local communities, but also with the private sector. And so that's why it can also work with companies like oil companies.
In 170 countries, so this is a very big organization. And these days, whenever you hear the word sustainable, you've got to wonder what that means, because depending on who's saying it, it can have a very different meaning. So what does the UN Development Program, how do they define sustainable?
Well, that's a question that we try to identify and answer through interviews with many different staffers. And it seems clear to us that sustainable has different meanings for different people. I mean, and different different people from different countries working for this UN agency. For some, it means phasing out completely of fossil fuels, not working with, private entities that drill. And for others, it means empowering economies where they stand today. And if that means that the local economy depends on oil currently and and is very much not planning on phasing out anytime soon, or else that will impact the population and the economy, then that means working with oil companies and trying to green them as much as possible. By that, I mean trying to work towards solar energy more, or them investing money in such projects, and also having better relationships with the local communities where they drill.
We're going to talk more about Colombia, which is the focus of your piece, but you also write that from Mexico to Kazakhstan, these partnerships are part of a strategy that treats oil companies not as environmental villains, but as major employers who can bring electricity to far-flung areas and economic growth to poor and middle-income nations. The development agency has used oil money to provide clean water and job training to areas that might otherwise be neglected. So tell us more about that and what you learned.
This was interesting to us because essentially we were finding more and more deals with private entities such as ExxonMobil or Shell. I mean, ExxonMobil, actually, I'm not sure there was any financial partnerships with them, but they definitely had several with Shell. They had others with Ecopetrol, other oil companies that are quite controversial and have been linked to human rights accusations. But what we were surprised by is that these were advertised very openly. There were no secrets. So it wasn't hard to find such kind of partnerships. And they were definitely in lots of different countries. They're also working currently in Kazakhstan with Eni, the energy Italian major energy company, which, as you know, has currently been facing trials and accusations of corruption and of environmental spillage in different countries. But when we interviewed particularly the head of UNDP, Achim Steiner, it was clear that they were under the impression that this was still better than to ignore these companies. And in order to make them better players, make them better actors in our world today, they should partner with them and try and see in ways that they can improve. But of course, from our reporting, we also found that in a lot of these times, UNDP receives quite a lot of money from these companies. And in some cases, as we have found in Colombia, the results do not equate with the money that they receive. They're not necessarily bringing greater development to the communities that are impacted by these companies. And we haven't seen a major shift in these companies' plans and policies. That's basically our impression from these types of partnerships.
You mentioned Achim Steiner, the agency's head. We were just wondering, what UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres would say about all of this, because if you've been following Antonio Guterres over the years, his language has become just stronger and stronger. I mean, lately he says our addiction to fossil fuels is pushing humanity to the brink. He compares oil industries, public relations, to that of tobacco, saying that companies exploit the same scandalous tactics as big tobacco decades before. I mean, he uses very strong language. He's been really going after the oil industry. So were you able to get a sense of what Antonio Guterres makes of all of this?
We haven't asked him, and we haven't asked his team. What we can say, it's been clear in the past, for example, that at some point UN agencies decided not to partner with the tobacco industry, and they thought it was deeply controversial. And that got consensus and approval from many of the countries that they work with. Unfortunately for the oil industry and the fossil fuel industry at large, it seems a very complex issue where many countries, particularly in Africa and in Latin America, still very much depend on these kind of companies and this industry, and would definitely not like or want UNDP or even certain other UN agencies like UNEP to stop working with such companies. And I think Achim Steiner is put in a very difficult position. And we were told many times by him and his team that they do not necessarily want to come into these countries and play the white savior role of saying, this is how you should do it. That's why it was important for us in this investigation, not necessarily to condemn these types of partnerships, but actually condemn the fact that these partnerships do not help local communities, which they are supposed to protect, and do not necessarily, you know, help these industry, which sometimes act in ways that are not sufficient and that abuse the environment, abuse the communities within which they work, do not make them any better. And that's what was important for us to pinpoint and to focus on.
Were you able to find out who is ultimately making these decisions? Like, for example, who made the decision in Colombia to create this partnership?
Yeah, I'm kind of laughing because who made these decisions is a question that not even a lot of people within UNDP can answer. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not a single decision that can be tracked. I mean, of course, and what I mean by that, I will explain myself. But for example, and I think I can say this. So we had a lot of people within UNDP. There was an overwhelming sense of frustration with the way the agency worked, at least, you know, with the people we were talking to who were giving us directly information and internal emails from the agency. And so we asked the agency's spokesperson if we could have a list of all the partnerships with oil companies. And normally, technically, on policy papers, UNDP is supposed to know at its headquarter level in New York all the partnerships that are going on with the extractive industry, oil, gas, and mining, because they are considered a high-risk sector, and therefore they should have various phases of due diligence, various phases of approval by different people, not only in the country within which these partnerships take place, but also at headquarter New York level. And what happens after we send the email is that the staffer who received the email, who was supposed to be in charge of having a list of some sorts of these companies, sent out to every single country, every different country offices, asking kind of in a panicked way, can you please tell me which kind of partnerships we have with the oil and gas and mining sector, showing that, in fact, there is very little knowledge within the organization, like for how many partnerships there exist and which kind of partnerships exist, who are the key players. For Colombia, we understand that it was the country representatives, the country coordinator of the time, who was behind this decision. But from speaking to internal sources also in Colombia, this deal with Geopark was going to bring quite a lot of money, and some of that money would go to UNDP. Normally, they receive a cut. They receive a percentage of the money that is going to local communities from a company, and that means that it's quite a lot of money for the agency and for their own staff and for, their own activities. So that was also what made this partnership that they liked.
Today, we're speaking with Sarah Hertez, an award-winning investigative journalist for the New York Times International Desk. We are talking about her piece, In the Amazon, a UN agency has a green mission, but dirty partners. One of the world's largest sustainable development agencies has worked with energy companies to quash opposition and keep oil flowing, even in sensitive areas. And I hope you can take the time to read Sarah's piece at yourcallradio.org. If you have any questions or comments about this, Sarah will be with us for about 15 or so more minutes. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. So let's talk more about this deal in Colombia. Can you first tell us about the Siona people, the Siona of Buenavista, who live on a small territory cut into the Amazon on the border with Ecuador? I mean, this is not obviously the first time that they have dealt with this kind of thing. They've been defending their land like so many indigenous people for many, many years. But first, tell us about the Siona people.
Sure. And there's something also I'd like to say is that this investigation was done not only by me, but it was also done with our bureau chief from the New York Times of Andes, Julie Turkwitz, who was in Bogota and who is based in Bogota and who did a lot of the reporting on the ground, as well as most of the interviews and the reporting on the Siona and when to interview them directly. And so, you know, to my understanding, The Siona are an indigenous group in Putumayo, which is a department of Colombia, and they are not basically having the greatest of conditions at the moment. They lack safe access to water. They have a lot of issues with electricity, and so they are very much dependent also on outside help. And this is how they are often partnering, not often, but they are sometimes partnering with agencies that can bring them development aid. And one of these agencies is UNDP, which was partnering with them to give them access to various needs and also give them funds to help them economically.
And obviously this is serious, but just to emphasize the point, you report that the oil industry and the cocaine trade have together contributed so much violence that one of the country's highest courts has designated the Siona at risk of extermination?
Yes. They are lesser and lesser. This is my understanding. And again, this is something our reporter, Julie Turkwitz, delved into much more detail on the ground with them. But essentially, yes, these communities are very much at risk, not only from climate change, but also from the cocaine industry. And of course, from these oil companies, which are drilling more and more in these areas. So what happens with the Siona is they have some ancestral land, which they do not want touched and which they very much want to keep. But companies like Geopark are trying to access these lands that so far are impenetrable, thanks to the Siona de Buenavista, who have been very much fighting for their own rights and fighting to keep their land. But the Geopark are trying to expand as much as possible, even though when we interviewed them, they denied these claims. But what we have seen from various sources is that they are trying to drill near their land and on their land. And this means that the Siona are ever more at risk.
Can you tell us more about Geopark? Again, it's a multinational petroleum company. I'm guessing that many of our listeners have never heard of Geopark.
Yeah, it's a multinational oil company, and they were under another name before, but they rebranded themselves as Geopark, I think from 1 or 2 years ago. And they operate in various Latin American countries, in Peru, and they have had some cases already, won a lawsuit against them for oil spillage. And they have also been accused of contaminating water sources where they operate, including where the Siona exists. They have also been accused of having quite a lot of forces, and by that I mean a lot of security guards. And in Colombia, that's been also involving what some have said, people working for armed forced groups. And there has been accusations that they have threatened indigenous leaders in the regions in which they operate, basically to give in and let them access certain pieces of land that normally they cannot access. These are very much allegations, and some of them we have found out from the people we've interviewed. But of course, Geopark disputes heavily these claims and say that they are no longer wanting to access these lands, and that they're very much trying to have better relationships with communities. And this is why they partner with UNDP, because they wanted to basically help communities in the areas in which they drill be better off after COVID.
Can you tell us more about what you learned about these dossiers on drilling opponents? The UN Development Agency, according to your reporting, has worked with the Colombian government and the oil industry to compile dossiers on drilling opponents. You report there is no evidence that these dossiers were used to target anyone, but in a country where environmental activists are killed at a rate higher than anywhere else in the world, activists and community members said they felt their lives had been put at risk. You report on one activist in particular, Edgar Humberto Cruz, who's listed in the report under the category as, quote, problematic, said UNDP organized meetings to highlight the benefits that Ecopetrol and other companies brought to the region. Mr. Cruz said they told us that it was not convenient to oppose the industry. So can you tell us more about that?
Yes. I think, you know, for all of us and me including, this was probably one of the most shocking findings. Essentially, what we found out is that what UNDP does in different countries, not only in Colombia, when they go and partner with a company or even an NGO, and they go on the ground and they are supposed to help people, or they aim to help people, they do what they say is called a stakeholder mapping. So where they kind of map out the different people in different regions and who their role, what their role are in the community and how they fit into this part, this project that they're going to work on, whether it be in like the environment or if it's peacekeeping missions. And here in this case, it seems like that UNDP partnered with an oil company, Ecopetrol, to help local communities and the company Ecopetrol have better relations in different areas. But what we found out from this kind of leaked document, it was inadvertently posted on a government website and the Ministry of Interior, is that when they do these mappings, they very much focus on the opponents of the oil industry. They name them, they give descriptions of what they do. One of the most compelling kind of evidence is when they even talk about priests in churches that give discourse against the industry. They give speeches against the industry. And this was this document was reported on by one local media already in Colombia, and in the region that it kind of targeted, people had heard of this report, and we interviewed quite a lot of them, and they said that they felt that their lives had been put at risk because they knew that the government had their names and that the oil industry had their names, and that it obviously was probably going to be used to have them, to monitor them and to make sure that they wouldn't protest more, go in the streets more, or try to do any activity against the industry. And so Edgar and I spoke many, many times, and he told me that there were a lot of times when UNDP came in and organized meetings with him, who is an environmental activist, and others, and told him that it was best not to protest against the industry and to let them in, and it would be better for everyone on an economic level.
I mean, Sarah, it's incredible to think that environmental activists are killed in Colombia at a rate of more than one every week, according to Global Witness. In 2020, for the second year in a row, Colombia saw the highest number of killings, with 65 land and environmental defenders murdered. These took place in the context of widespread attacks on human rights defenders and community leaders across the country. And indigenous peoples were particularly impacted. Of course, COVID just made the situation worse.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that also, you know, made the story for us even stronger, and which is why we focused on this. And we decided to very much identify the problems that there were in Colombia with UNDP writing reports on environmental defenders opposing the industry and feeding it to the industry. At the same time, I want to say something regarding the Ciona de Buenavista. The reason we chose them is that, unlike, and this is not to put any blame at all whatsoever, I want there to be no misunderstanding, but we interviewed other communities that were impacted by these types of partnerships, including Edgar's community in Meta. But the Ciona de Buenavista, when they saw that UNDP was partnering with Geopark, they took extreme measures to fight this. They had calls with UNDP, they had their lawyers file complaints, and this ended up in having an internal investigation at UNDP, wondering why they would partner with Geopark, and also canceling the deal. And unlike many of the indigenous communities in the region, which are not always but often associated as victims, here it was for us very inspiring to see this community fight back, and we wanted to show this in our reporting.
So it's been canceled. So can you tell us more? What is the status of this relationship?
Yeah, it's the deal with Geopark and UNDP was canceled following big fight from the Ciudad de Buena Vista and their lawyers. And this meant that the deal was off, that Geopark never gave any money to UNDP. At least this is what we're told. Some sources tell us that's not the case, but I haven't seen any evidence so far that that's not the case. But they canceled the partnership. And after that, the Ciudad de Buena Vista also decided to cancel other projects that they had with UNDP. So they had this other project that was linked to the environment, to giving them other forms of aids through UNDP money. They canceled this project. And then they also gave back money that they had received from UNDP. It was around $13,000. They gave the money back to UNDP despite needing it very much, as a symbol of never wanting to work with UNDP again. And they made that very clear.
We should also say, according to your reporting, to the Siona people on the Buena Vista Reservation, oil drilling is an assault akin to draining blood from the earth. And these organizations are putting people in such a difficult situation because, as you report, this is a village with no running water, intermittent electricity, persistent poverty, and any money would mean food and opportunity, but at what cost?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, this is all correct. However, and you know, this was something that we discussed a lot when we were doing this reporting. This investigation took over 10 months. We really did a lot of reporting in Colombia, but we also did a lot of reporting interviewing different people across the world in UNDP, former staffers, current staffers. This is not an investigation where most of these people working inside UNDP are evil and want to mess up the world. This is, you know, an organization that suffers from wanting to raise money at all costs for development at a point where it loses track of their mission, but also working with so many countries and communities on the ground with which are often not receiving any aid from other international organizations and enough money or from local organizations. And that puts them in a difficult spot. I'm not defending UNDP whatsoever, but I just want to say that, yes, it's really just shocking, this kind of partnership that existed between UNDP and Geopark, and the effects that it had on communities and the potential effects it could have had on the Siona. But they are also put in, from what we found more and more, what I felt more and more, is in a difficult position where staffers are indeed not wanting to do wrong, but end up doing wrong.
Keen. You report that in 2012, the agency announced a partnership with Shell Oil that helped train Iraqis to work in the oil and gas industry, a project with the energy company Pemex help expand oil production in Mexico. So can you just talk more, like, what is in store for the future of UNDP? What sort of response did you get from this reporting?
Well, UNDP issued an official statement saying they refuted the claim that they basically put the interests of private companies at the cost of protecting local communities. They said that they welcome public scrutiny. This was the official kind of reply. We received, you know, various sources who were obviously happy, but at the same time, it was interesting because a lot of the sources, you know, who we established a relationship with across the since the last 10 months, they said that it had put a lot of the issues come to light through this piece, but that there were many more, like issues of retaliation, not being able to speak out, issues not only linked to oil companies, but also corruption in different countries. Mm. So it was interesting. There was a sense of relief that the piece was out and welcome, but also, well, this is only the tip of the iceberg. And this was the sense from sources that we spoke to and from the agency. what I can say is, you know, we spoke to a lot of people officially, their spokesperson, the head, and they definitely welcomed really a lot of conversations. And yeah, this was very pleasant to deal with them in this way and to not have to just send an email and ask for comments at the end, but rather establish a relationship and have discussions. Why are you doing this? Why are you not doing this? And so hopefully that this article will feed into future work that they do.
Just to provide one more fact from your piece, as a share of the agency's almost $9 billion budget, money from the oil and gas industry is a pittance, about $6 million a year. And this is according to data provided by the UNDP?
Yes, yes. This was indeed something that we spent a lot of time identifying. Yes, UNDP said that they receive approximately $6 million from the oil and gas industry. We welcomed this information. At the same time, we also are not sure that this is entirely correct based on the many, many different partnerships that they have with the oil and gas industry and from internal emails showing that they are not even aware of all the partnerships at headquarter level that is going on. I'm sure it's definitely not a big percentage of the overall budget, but yeah, it could be that it's a bit more, but it's definitely not a big amount.
Sara Hertes is an award-winning investigative journalist for the New York Times International Desk. Sara and Julie Turkowitz wrote the piece, "In the Amazon, a UN agency has a green mission, but dirty partners." And you can find the piece at yourcallradio.org. Sara, thanks to you and your colleagues for this important reporting. And thank you so much for joining us. We'd love to have you back to talk about any follow-up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Coming up after a break, we will talk about the West's unprecedented drought, which is leading to Colorado River cuts. Experts say this is just the beginning. This is Your Calls One Planet series. We'll be back after this.